Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Welcome once again to Farming Aotearoa, our monthly roundup of all things agriculture, with myself, Catherine, in the studio and agricultural journalist who has been following events around the country and overseas, Peter Burke. Hello.
G'day, how are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks. But as we head into winter, things apparently are changing, and it's also time for lots of events on the agricultural calendar. So what have you got for us this time, Peter?
Well, it's a lot of events on, and there's one that's been, which I'm going to talk about, and then there's one that's coming, which I'll also talk about. But it's also that time of the year where there's almost a sort of a break in a funny sort of way in the farming, some aspects of farming. The dairy farmers are sort of drying off their cows. There's no lambs around, so they're sort of having a bit of a break of sorts. It's a bit of that hiatus, hence you've got some of these events coming up. You've got a lot of conferences coming up. They tend to take place in this window between June, July. Probably that's the main sort of conference time for agriculture. So so the first thing I'm going to talk about is the biggest event in agricultural in New Zealand at the moment, which is the Ahu Whenua Trophy for the top Māori farmer of the year and the top young Māori farmer of the year. And I'm privileged, I actually work for Ahu Whenua, I have to concede that, but also I was privileged to be there up in Hamilton for that. And 850 people for the gala dinner, which is a pretty amazing number. And people think that's high. We've actually been as high as 900. We've actually been to 1,000 one year since I've been around it. So we saw a very, very, very polished farm operation up in Mangakino, Wairarapa Moana. Their operation is something like, I think it's 10,000 cows, 12,000 hectares. It's a big operation. Wow. They're the biggest single supplier to the Māori dairy company Miraka, which they're a foundation partner of. And one of their farms, one of their 12 farms, called Farm 4 of all things, that was its name, that won the competition. And I went up to the field and saw Farm 4 and spent a day with them. And they were really exciting. It's actually interesting because it's an all Wahine Māori team.
Oh, really?
All the women, the manager, right through everyone on that farm is a Wahine.
That's fantastic.
So it's quite,
is that the only one?
Hey,
is that
anyone I've seen? I mean, there may be others. I don't know, but that's the only one I know of. But anyway, that was the team that won the competition. So that was quite an exciting night, and it was. We had a lot of. We had all the hierarchy there. We had the Prime Minister there. We had Nicola Willis there. We had, you know, a few MPs as well, and a lot of Maori royalty. We had King Tahiti there, and all others. So there was, and then you've got this whole cohort of people from the agricultural sector there. They come from, it was dairy, of course, this year, but you also get others from the other aspects of agriculture, like horticulture and sheep and beef. The banks, a lot of sponsors there who support the event, which is a very big one. So it was great to see. We had Minister Tama Poitaka there. He's talking about how good, you know, he described the thing as a great event, celebrating Māori, you know, agriculture, and saying it's incredibly linked to what he calls identity, which is the sea, the land, the forests, the mountains and rivers. And just saying that there's a real conviction among Māori farmers that they have the intergenerational responsibility for their future of their land. So it was a great thing, and just talked about the brilliant innovation work, which you looked at this farm, it's a very, very, it's very innovative. It's not fancy. It isn't, you know, the highest tech thing, but it's certainly a very good farm. Like, they've reduced their environmental footprint by half by simply making some decisions around. They discovered that they were doing winter cropping, which is growing, you know, crops for stock. They found by cutting that out and just bringing ordinary grass pasture in and other supplements, they could reduce their environmental footprint. So they've done that. So they've done a lot of things like that, which are just, they're very practical things. They're not great science. They're just simple, you know, let's make a call on that. So they were, and it's also up in that Mangakino area, it's very cold. I have to say that, you know, it wasn't the warmest part of the world to be in.
Okay.
So it was an interesting night. So
they have good wool up there, surely.
Oh, well, all you do is, I say, when it's cold, what do you do? The answer is simply just put on some more clothes. It's quite simple. It's not too hard to work that out. I think Kingi Smiler, who's the chair of that group, he was pretty elated. This is the third time that Kingi's been involved in winning a trophy. He was involved in the sheep and beef one, he's involved in the horticulture one, and now dairy. So Kingi's got the trifecta. He's pretty happy now. He can go away and, I don't know what, run another marathon, which is what he's likely to do. He's quite a character.
Oh, gosh, okay.
So, and also interesting, you see Nicola Willis there. She'd never been there before to this night. I think she was absolutely surprised at the size of it. You know, you get people 850 for dinner.
It's a lot of people for dinner.
It's a hell of a lot of people. And yet it's seamless, the whole thing. You know, great networking.
And this is where? Remind us where it's being held?
This was held in up in Claudelands, up in the showgrounds up in Hamilton. Next year, it's going to be held down in the Manawatu. So it'll be in Palmerston North next year. It'll be for Sheep and Beef there. Now, the other thing we had that night also, it's a great occasion for young Māori farmers. We had Ben Porora, who's a young farmer. He had a rather checkered childhood. He's been in prison, he admitted that. He spent a number of years in prison. And he in the course of that, he got involved in the dairy farm on the prison farm. And as a result of that, he's come out of prison and he's really turned his life around in an amazing way. And I've got to hand it out to the guy. He entered this competition 3 years ago. He's a little bit arrogant then, to be fair, but he's really got a hold of himself now. And what he's doing is showing others what can be done. He has been through the mill. He's had all the problems that you might expect to it, and it's been pretty tough. And you know, he admits, you know, he did something terribly wrong. But his wife has stuck by him. He's married, he's got kids now. And Ben, I think, is actually going to do a great job for those people who sometimes we write off in society and say, well, they'll never be any good. They've just done this, so therefore forget about them. Well, Ben is an example of someone who, through the guts, determination, and the absolute honesty about him, has come through and said, okay, this is what I've done. He's a bit careful. I think, you know, I think first of all, when he first started off on this, he was a little bit inclined to boast about it. I think now he's got to the point of saying, okay, I know what it's about. He's moderated his narrative. And he actually won, a few weeks earlier, he won an award down for the Dairy Industries Award for a young emerging leader. So he's carrying on, showing what can be done. And I think that was pretty impressive. The other thing was impressive too. There were three contestants in for this, and they were all very, very fine young people. And it was really interesting to see that the chief executive of Te Tama Pārua for the Māori Trustee, Dr. Charlotte Severn, gave each of them a special prize of a scholarship of $7,500 each.
Wow.
To put towards further educating themselves and bring up, because the issue that she's saying, and she said in her speech that night, that I wish I had 100 more people like these three, because for the future of Māori dairy farming, Māori farming in general, is going to need young aspiring leaders, people who are prepared to go the extra mile, put their hearts and souls into it, and work towards it, have the guts to go in a competition like this, because it's not easy. I mean, these kids are they're new to this sort of thing, and I was very privileged to spend time with them. And you've got to look at them and say they're only young. Some of them are only, Ben was older, he's nearly 30. The other two are quite young, they're in their early 20s. But nonetheless, they're showing great aptitude for what they do, great professionalism, and they've got real goals as to where they want to go. So that was a really, I had a great time, and I always enjoy Ahi Whenua. It's something I never cease to enjoy, and I'm very privileged to be a part of that whole thing. So that was the big event that I've had time at, and a great weekend up in Hamilton.
I bet. Well, good to see you back down here, where it's slightly warmer, maybe.
Yeah, it is a bit. It varies a bit, doesn't it, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So anyway, so next week, well, whatever week it is, mid-June, we've got National Field Days.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, that means that a whole lot of farmers get come along to look at the latest tractor. I couldn't tell you what they were. They're green, blue, white.
Big, small.
They're big, small, little, medium, and that's all. Yeah. I wouldn't know one from the other, and what talk means is what I do on the radio, not what they do with a tractor.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I have no idea of those. I'm unmechanical, put it that way.
Yeah.
Always have been. But it's an event which has been running since the late 60s. 1969 it first started, and then it morphed into where it is now at Mystery Creek, which is a sort of an amphitheatre just beside Hamilton Airport. It's a massive site. My first experience of that was in 1981 when I was with Radio New Zealand in rurals, and I went there. I was quite staggered to see the site. I always remember one thing, the first year, they have these little ponds there, and the ducks came in to land in the morning. The poor little beggars sort of burnt their bums on the ponds because they were frozen over.
Oh, wow.
It was cold as hell. It was
oh,
cold
my
as
goodness.
Charity.
Yeah.
And I went up there for many years with Radio New Zealand. We had a lot of fun there. I'll tell you one thing which was really quite funny. We decided to have a we worked on a private radio station up there, which was a special field days radio to get farmers along and to talk about the thing, and went sort of locally. So we decided to run a competition called Stump the Sheep. So what we did was we recorded the bleats of some of the sheep, and you had to guess the breed of sheep by its bleat. Now, there was a slight problem in all of this that we have to confess to now. We weren't able to get all of the breeds, so another guy and I got in the studio and pretended to be a certain breed of sheep.
Oh, my goodness. And no one picked it. It was a human sheep. Sorry.
There were human sheep. I know. We were a bit, anyway. So in the end, the person that won a ton of fertilizer. Fortunately, for some good reason, I don't know how we managed to do it, but they were also quite close to where the field days were, which helped us deliver it. It wasn't sort of down in Southland, which would have been a slight problem had someone in Southland won the competition. So we always had a lot of fun up there. And
sounds like fun.
Got up to all sorts of mischief. But nowadays it's a bit more po-faced up there,
I
think.
Yeah, I was going to say, when was this, the 80s?
This was the 80s,
You would have been misbehaving.
But nowadays, I think misbehaving, you'll get fired for it. Yeah. If you defraud the organisation for a couple of million, you're fine. You'll just get promoted to being chief executive. That's what happens these days. We all know that. You know, tell a joke and you're gone.
Yeah.
Steal a bit of money while you're fine. You're part of the team. But anyway...
Oh, how times have changed.
They have. But the field days this year, I think, will be quite different because we are going through a downturn, obviously, and there's no doubt that the term tyre kicking will have new meaning this year, probably. I don't expect farmers to take out their wallets. I think they're locked away in the strong room. I think their wives have got their nibs on the farmers going to spend things and buying machinery. They'll probably come along there. A lot of them come along there for the social side of it.
Mm-hmm.
They meet their mates every once a year and have a beer down, a big burger and go off farm feed down there and hang along with a pile of chips and sausages and all that sort of stuff. The politicians will be there, of course, trading, doing their usual, vote for me, please. I'm prettier than the other one.
Just had an election. Can you leave them alone for a while?
Oh, no, they don't. They're just relentless. Don't worry about it. And then you get the suits in Wellington turn up there as well, so they get past Johnsonville for the first time in about a year, and they end up in Hamilton.
Do they at least wear some gumboots or something?
Well, sometimes they're appropriately dressed, and sometimes they're inappropriately dressed for the occasion. You can always tell them, and you can tell sometimes they've got new red bands on, so they must be new. They've been told that they should wear red bands for the field day, but they're new, and you can tell they've never been there before.
You've got to splash in the mud first.
You've got to get them dirty before you go up there. Come on, look like someone, Anyway.
There's a hint for new politicians. Go and get your gumboots dirty.
I've always had a bit of fun with politicians. John Key was one of the more memorable ones. He had a bit of fun about him, but some of the others have been a bit boring. Someone once said about a certain politician during the election campaign that he went around the country stirring up apathy. But anyway, I won't tell you who that was. That would be a secret I'll keep for my book. but the other thing we will see is quite a lot of events held there. You'll get a lot of the embassies, the overseas countries will be there. You've got the EU, you'll have the UK, you'll have Ireland, you'll have other countries will be there supporting their own manufacturers particularly.
Okay.
How they will do this year, I don't know. As I say, I predict it'll be a bit of a tyre-kicking exercise. I would like to go there this year. I felt that for me, getting up at 5 in the morning, spending all day there, going back at night and working till midnight, then getting up at 5 again is past me. I've given up with it now. I'm going to do some remote stuff this year and get stories still, which I'll do. I might go next year if I'm feeling a bit better, but not this year. But it's still an experience. It's something that you've got to give credit to the people who set it up. It's lost a bit of its connection with farmers. In the early days, that the field day used to be part field day and part, they had a farmer's session there organised by Ag Research, or MPI as it was, or MAF, I forget, they've changed their name so many damn times, I forget what they were. But Ruakura used to come along, do a farmers conference, and the farmers went along to that. Then they went to the field day the next couple of days. And I think that connection between farmers and researchers the gap has widened over the years by the structure that we've got in New Zealand, which I think is pretty awful, but I'm not going to criticise idiots. They're there, they were, they did it, and we can't change it. But that's a missing part to me. However, it will be a place. They have Friday, you'll see a lot of school kids there. The numbers, this is smoke and mirrors, but they'll say 140,000 there, 120,000, but there'll be 20,000 school kids there.
Right, okay.
So, and that's not wrong.
Yeah.
But you do get a lot of people who come there from the town to see the country. And that's a good thing. I'm not saying that's wrong. But those that could write a cheque or buy something is smaller number, and I suspect smaller than ever in number this year.
Right.
So a big event, great to go to. If you haven't been there, it's a great experience. And, you know, I've been there, going there since 81 in different guises, and I've enjoyed every time, most of the time. But this time I thought, no.
He's having a break, people.
I'm going to sit at home and have a beer and a wine at night and, you know, enjoy myself.
And not get up at 5 and
not get up at 5.
Work till midnight.
So anyway, so the next thing I want to talk about is an interesting one, really, in a way. It's around the issue of, I've called it sort of trust your wife. Now, the other week I went up to a function in Palmerston North, and a guy called Peter Alexander, who is a farm accountant from Christchurch, and he's one of the more, I think, how can I say, independent sound advisors in the farming sector at the moment. He's been around, he's seen upturns and downturns over 50 or 60 years. He's in his 80s now. He's still working full time and a real character. But one of the comments he made was that in a downturn, farmers should listen to their wives. And the reason he says this is that she knows his weaknesses.
Ah.
Now, that's a truism, actually, I think, to be fair. Wives, partners, whoever, know the weaknesses of their partner, whatever they might be. And that sometimes the farmer will be obsessed with what he calls their own manner. They want to go to the pub, they want to go to the football match, they want all these things, which are very much the farmer sort of thing. But in a downturn, maybe, you can't do that. He talked about the fact that farmers are interested in buying machinery, whereas the wife is interested in renovating the house and going travelling overseas. And he said, why not just buy a video of a place overseas and watch it? That'll be what you'll probably get this time round. So there was some very sage advice there around how farmers should deal with the things that are coming up ahead of them. And just messages like, you know, listen to people, get advice, listen to your bank manager. Bank managers are somewhat maligned a little bit in the farming community, but as he pointed out, they're very experienced people. They've seen pain in the past. They're a bit like doctors. They know what pain is about in an economic sense. And while they may not be popular, a dentist may not be popular in some ways, but they know how to fix your teeth. So what's the complaint about? Bank managers are saying they can probably fix you financially. So that was one of the messages which I thought was quite sound about that. The other one he thought was that you know, a lot of the problems we've got at the moment are beyond the farm gate. We're not talking about a problem which can be fixed on farm. You've got high interest rates. You've got lower demand for our product overseas. That's partly a China issue. It's not only that. The rest of the world has got economic problems the same as we have. Therefore, consumers are not buying as much food. They're not buying some of the expensive stuff like lamb. Hence, lamb is you know, the price that farmers are getting for a lamb. It was a few years ago, $140 a lamb. It's now about 80-odd. Mutton is down in price. So those are big factors. Mm. And wool is worth nothing. You know, you just pay to get it shorn. So beef's a bit better. But farmers are actually going through some pretty tough times. So that was the message around that. You know, listen to people, get advice, take it, and don't go into your cave, but look about what you could do in the future. So that was a good piece of advice. And I thought that if people listened and heard people like Peter Alexander more often, maybe. I mean, his messages have been around for a long time. They're not new, but they're very sound.
And maybe especially at the moment.
Very especially at the moment. It's a time when people have got to be really exercising caution, saying, okay, where am I sitting? Look at my losses. How can I minimise the losses? How can I, you know, and not get too far ahead of yourself? Not think 5 years out, think 1 year out. How can I get to the end of the year in a better position than I am now, potentially? So that's one of the things that was there. So that was the main thing. I've got one more thing to go because we're running out. How are we going for time?
Oh, we're doing pretty well. We've got about 9 or 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'll talk a bit more about Peter Alexander because I think just the messages for me were he talked about, you know, some of the messages were there for urban people as well, like, you know, what do you need to have in your retirement? Interesting comment, which was a bit confronting for some people, was have health insurance. Now, I can vouch for that because I know that in my case I've kept it on. And if I hadn't had it, I would have been penniless by now, probably.
Oh, jeepers. Okay.
You know, you can get... And what happens is that a lot of people, when they get older, decide they can't afford it. That's actually the time they need it because it becomes... Because the operations become more unaffordable. I had a friend the other day who problem, gave up the health insurance, is faced with a $100,000 bill if they want to get this operation, which they will maybe wait some time for in the public system.
Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? It's the public system is
it's not is bad. Not what it will help you if you're on death's door.
Absolutely.
But if you want to get, and it's the quality of life that disappears if you have to wait on and go on a waiting list.
And if you're in pain all the time,
It's getting worse. You're getting more miserable, and I think that the issue of keeping that is important. The other issue that he made, I thought was quite fascinating, was he said, above all, educate your kids well if you're a farmer, because they may not come back to the farm. They may want to become a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist or whatever it might be. But educating your kids is the most important thing you can do. And I thought that was very good advice. If you're going to spend money, spend it on education. Encourage them to take out a student loan. And eventually, they'll pay it off. But to have them educated is really going to give them a future.
Mm.
So I thought that was some really good, nice advice for Jen, which could be applied right across the community, not just to farmers.
It's true.
Those things are things that we all have to look at, and how much we save, what proportion we do. And everyone's circumstances are different. I'm not saying there's one size fits all, but these are some of the lines that you can work to. So that was that bit. Now, what else are we going to talk about? Let's talk about bull, shall we?
Bulls.
Bull without the other word alongside it. We won't use that word.
It's so tempting.
It is tempting, I know, because I'm in the public relations business. I know all about the other side of it. I'm on the receiving end of it now as a journalist.
Are we talking about breeding, or what are we going to talk about for
genetics.
The bull?
This is genetics.
Okay, it is breeding.
Which is interesting, because at the moment, I didn't realise it, but I forget the percentage, it's quite high. It's over 50% of the beef that we produce in New Zealand is a derivative of the dairy industry, because to get a cow and milk, you have to have a calf. So therefore, what do you do with that calf? Do you put it on the wagon and send off as a bobby calf?
No, don't.
And not what they're saying now is no, but then what sort of calf do you want? And the issue that we're talking about, there was a very good, went to another session at a farm up just north of in the Horowhenua, and a professor, Rebecca Hickson, is a real expert in beef genetics and dairy beef genetics, a very smart person. And what she is saying is that no breed of cattle is better than the other. It's the traits within that breed. All breeds have good traits. And it's a matter then of seeking out the traits that you want for putting a straw into the cow to produce a calf that meets your needs. The dairy farmers' needs are fundamentally, they need to have a calf that comes out easily. The gestation period is short. But what they're saying for the beef industry is you want to also have a calf that grows quickly and well. And the idea of genetics is to get a sire into some of your stock. Now, you farmers will inevitably put a straw in to get replacements, which will be of the breed they've got, be it Kiwi Cross or Frisian or Jersey or whatever it might be. But for some of those with the poorer animals, perhaps, you can put in a straw which would give you a very good beef genetics, which means that you'll get a better calf, which will be more saleable, which in the end, when it comes through, what happens is the calf gets born on the farm, the calf rearer buys it, they rear the calves, they sell them to people who finish those animals off, which then they sell them, and that beef becomes what we export or whatever we do with. So the aim is to try and find, get better genetics into the dairy beef industry and to increase the dollars that everyone gets along the line. It doesn't cost any more to do this, by the way. It's not expensive. It's not extra dollars to get a better bull. They're just available from a livestock improvement. But to think about the end game more than just, I want a calf that comes out quickly and the calves and milk and them, get off the damn property as fast as I can. And that's what they're saying. So the traits are quite interesting, that every bull, every breed will have good and bad traits, and that to look up and get some good advice and to do that means that if a farmer can get into cahoots with say, a calf rearer, and then they in turn with a finisher, then you've got a line of animals coming through, which will be good. And everyone, and I think dairy farmers will find that they'll probably get more for their calves because they're good. The calf rearer will get more when they sell them onto the finisher, and the finisher will get more at the other end. So there's a real reason to do this. But it was explained, I think, very, very well by Rebecca Hickson and by another guy called Paul Charteris from the LIC. Again, they're looking at doing the same thing. They're seeing you know, will there be a day one day when bobby calves are no longer, that we have bobby calves in New Zealand? Will that trend be something that's unacceptable worldwide? It may well be in terms of animal rights. We don't know. There's not that sign yet. But let's get prepared for it. Let's get the people thinking about the genetics, what they can do with them. And if they do that, then surely as a country we can produce better beef. Now, beef is doing well. It's a very, let's be fair, it's sold extensively. A lot of the beef that's in New Zealand is sold to America, because American beef, I watched it one day, I never forget it. I went to a big feedlot somewhere in Montana.
No, that must have been awful.
These were the Euclid trucks coming around in almost in procession, dumping off grain. These animals never went outside at all. And as a result of that, the meat is quite fatty. So you get very, very fatty meat. Whereas the New Zealand product is grass-fed, therefore it has less fat. And the aim, and with genetics, you can improve what they call the marbling of that. So in other words, you can get a better yield. You can get much better yield of meat out of it. And therefore, we tend to sell some of our meat to America, which gets mixed with theirs and it comes into the hamburger trade, which, of course, is Americans are great hamburger people. Mm. They also like prime cuts as well. But to me, I thought it was a very good day and really top marks to Beef and Lamb New Zealand for what they did. They organised it. There was quid numbers there. But they're going around the country doing these days. And I think they're very positive ones. They're starting to see their end game in the future. How can you... I mean, this takes 2 or 3 years to get through. Remember, the day you put the straw in is a year for that calf to come through. It's another year or two before that ends up on the market. So it's about a three-year program. So farmers are quite long-term strategists in a way. They have to be.
Have to be,
given what they've got to do. So the end game is a long way out. And it takes a while to get these done. But certainly for me, I learnt a lot by going to that event and was pretty, you know, impressed by what they was doing there. So that's that.
Well, it sounds economically good and also a better outcome from an animal welfare perspective.
It is. I think I don't like the bobby calf idea much personally. Oh, I never terrible. Have done it. I never...
Don't Google it. If you don't know what we're talking about, do not Google it.
Yeah, don't. So just finally, one of the people that I have a greatest of admiration for is the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, Simon Upton. He's one of the more moderate, reasoned individuals around the environment. He doesn't sort of come from left or right or centre. He comes from very practical, good science. And he's produced a document around the land use change. Land use change is a big issue in New Zealand at the moment. You know, what should we do with it? Where is it doing? And he's identified some things which I think are very important. He's said that the policy around land use change is very fragmented. It's all over the show. It's a big as muddle. That the data is not good enough. It's poor. And therefore... it's being driven by afforestation. That's what it's being driven by. So let's plant trees in lieu of whatever. And you're seeing that in some places where you go past farms where you think, that is not bad, cheap country, but we're putting trees on it. Now, it's all driven by carbon credits, and you can argue, I'm not going to get into the debate about that, but there was an argument that says that this is not the best use of land. And I think we've got to look and say, what is the best use of land? We know that some of the poorer land in the country, which for sheep was in, say, the Wairarapa and in Marlborough, it's the best wine-producing country in the world, probably. So, you know, what is called class 1 to 6, 1 being the best, 6 being the worst. 6 may be the worst for one use, but the best for another.
Yeah.
You've got to be very careful how you do this, but also to look at how can you maximise the use of land for the benefit of New Zealand, so that we don't end up with a situation where we're having to, dare I say, import tomatoes from China, if we're not careful, we're heading to because of what's happening at the moment. So if anyone wants to read a good report, I'd say go into the website of the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, have a look at the report. It's very reasoned. And I think he's putting out some things there which says, OK, central government and local government have got to get their act together. And start to look about this and look at dealing with local communities, not making rules which are nationwide.
For everyone.
Everyone, not the one size fit doesn't. Mm. You've got to look at the nature of New Zealand. We see our weather forecasts.
Yeah.
They're very, very specific.
Yeah.
Catchments are the same. So let's look at things like that. So to me, this report signals what should be done, what could be done. And I think a very positive report. And another very, very good contribution by Simon Upton. I think he's done a great job in that role, one of the best ever.
Thank you so much for coming into studio today.
Always fun to do it.
See you next time.
Bye.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.